Welcome to this week's Solo Electric Podcast. Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined as usual by Seth. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Awesome. All right, we have plenty of news to cover this week. We're sorry we're starting not on schedule, a little bit sooner this week because I have to get out of here real quick after the show. So giving me some wiggle room to be able to get out. So it's still going to be a full hour as usual, but starting half an hour early. So thanks a lot for joining us live and on your podcast app, and if you're watching later on YouTube. We're going to start out this week with the little pricing shenanigans, kerfuffle, whatever you want to call it, that happened right after the show. Was it? It was last Friday?
It was a couple hours after.
Yeah.
Not too long.
So what happened, if you guys haven't followed, Tesla decreased, well, you could say that they decreased the price of the Model 3 Performance, but the way they did it is by basically making the Performance Upgrade package free, which used to be a $5,000 package. Now, the way... So I want to be careful how I approach this because I got a lot of bad feedback about it because, of course, I'm...
A lot of bad.
I'm biased about it, and I was straight obvious about that in the post. I started with that in the post because that affects me directly because I have one of those cars. Now, I think there's some important context to have to understand why this was the wrong thing to do from Tesla for the customers. Now, it's not about, oh, Tesla shouldn't decrease the price of the cars. Of course, they should. That's the goal. But that's not exactly what happened. And that's why I think the context is very important. The context is that Tesla started out the price actually higher than that when they first announced the car back in May. And they decreased the price a month into starting to take order for the car. When they did that, they adjusted the price for all people that already placed their order, like they usually do, which makes sense because you don't, even they just started production, they haven't really started deliveries yet. Then when they did that, when they did decrease the price, they did something weird with the pricing of the car. They unbundled a bunch of options, creating the Performance Upgrade package for $5,000. That package included the wheels, the 20-inch wheels, the suspension, the spoiler, the brake too, I think. Was there the brake
wearing? Yeah, brakes as well.
Yeah, the brake and the aluminum alloy pedals too. And the increase in speed from 145 to 155. So a lot of it was what was making the car the performance version of the Model 3, really. Okay, so then they did that. Then they started the volume production a month later, started deliveries. And now 2 months after changing that, they re-include the package inside the car, reducing the price by $5,000.
So basically, everybody who had been signed up for, you know, 1 or 2 years or however long, or, you know, basically bought one day one, paid $5,000 more than the price is 2 months afterwards. So they dropped the price $5,000 2 months after they started shipping.
Yeah, and... One thing that people are misunderstanding, they're saying, oh, you shouldn't complain. It's Tesla improved the productions during that time. So they are able now to make the car for cheaper. And that's why they're now reducing their price. That's not true at all. So, and I can understand why people would say that. But maybe I didn't explain it right enough in my first post about it. But if you've been following electric close enough, you should understand this. So clearly what happened is that in Q3... Tesla surprised everyone last week by announcing the fact, where was it the week before that? The fact that the average gross margin on the Model 3 was over 20%. That's the average gross margin on all Model 3 that were produced in Q3. So if that was 20%, you can imagine what was the gross margin on the performance version of the Model 3. It was easily 25% to 30%. I'll be surprised I wouldn't be surprised if it's closer to 30% than 25%. So they made a lot of money on those cars. They didn't manage to reduce the cost of all those performance upgrade package by 100% during those 3 months. I mean, we're talking about wheels, we're talking about a new suspension, we're talking about those stuff. So what they did basically is that they knew they would have a ton of demand for the car because they've been accumulating orders from Tesla fans for years over the performance version of the car, including myself. I was waiting for that. So knowing that, they knew that they had some margin with the price where they could increase the price more because they knew they had the demand for it, that people would pay for it. So that's what they did, which is fair. But then the difference is in the gross margin. It's only in the gross margin. So they're only squeezing more money out of the early adopters. And then as soon as that demand was reduced, what they did is that they went after the real demand of the car. So they reduced the price back to the real price of the car, which should have been $5,000 lower to start with, to get the real demand for the car, because I assume that the demand went down after that. Otherwise, Tesla wouldn't have changed the price, really.
Right. So, like, without going too far down that rabbit hole, like, I think it's pretty understood. I think a lot of the animosity came because the perceived, like, you know, you are a blessed Tesla owner because, you know, you've become kind of the voice of Tesla owners, and now you're like, you know, you're demanding money even though, you know, you've gotten all these referral things and you make your career from Tesla.
The other thing has nothing to do with it, though.
It has nothing to do with it. Zero. But people don't, you know, they don't think like that.
And also, I never demanded any money. All I did is point out the fact that it was wrong for the early adopters. And you pointed it out, actually, after that, that there was some precedent for that with the original iPhone when it came out. That Apple did the exact same thing. They used the early demand for the iPhone to increase the price. Then 2 months in the release, they decreased the price by $200. And I think Steve Jobs' response to the blowback from doing that was perfect in expressing my issue with it. Because I completely understand the fact that Tesla can do that. I mean, they are perfectly within their rights to take advantage of the demand that they created over 2 years to squeeze more money out of the early buyers. All I'm saying is that that's not the right thing to do for those buyers. And as a company, you shouldn't aim to do that. You should aim to be fair to the buyer of the cars and try to adjust your pricing with the demand going on a longer period of time. That makes more sense. I don't have the quote here with me, but what Steve Jobs said exactly is he said that. He said, we need to make a better job to do the right thing for early buyers while trying to more aggressively get new buyers. And I mean, I think that's fair. And sure enough, he ended up issuing some credits to the early buyers. And Elon seems to have agreed, because that's what he said he was going to do too. He's going to issue some credit back to the people who bought the car. So
yeah, maybe you'll get a $5,000 credit and you can buy a bunch of more spoilers and stuff.
you're supposed to get those spoilers already.
So Matt Abida in the comments brings up a good point that you know, it's the performance edition. How many of those were sold? I don't think it's a big percentage of the, and actually we probably even know because we have a pretty good grasp of the numbers.
Oh, it's in the several thousand for sure, maybe even like tens of thousands.
So, you know, it's a significant number, but it's not, I don't think it's material to Tesla's profits. I mean, you know, it is, but not, you know, it's not as much as Elon's Twitter fines, for instance. We'll go into
I think it would be in the close to those numbers, really. Like, if everyone picks up the 5,000, I think it's going to be pretty close to it. And was my point. What I was upset with is that a lot of people, you are attacking Tesla now, you're going after their profit and everything. Wait a minute. I paid that car $100,000 Canadian here, $99,000 and something. We know for a fact that Tesla got between 25 and 30% gross margin on it. So that's $25,000 to $30,000. They were giving back 5,000 because they artificially boosted the gross margin on it versus, and now they're willing to take a lower gross margin on new orders to try to generate more demand. I mean,
Well, what they should have done is dropped it $1,000 and then, you know, a couple months later, drop it another $1,000 and kind of slowly reduce the price. So it's not like, hey, I just ordered this car 2 months ago and now it's worth $5,000 less. That's yeah. a little crazy.
Well, I think they have broader issues with their pricing structure, really. That's why I made the title like the pricing structure issues, because, I mean, it's quite obvious at this point. There were some issues similar in the past. This was the worst one, because like $5,000 just 2 months after launching a new car. That's
I think they dropped the Model X $5,000 previously.
Well, maybe not like 2 months into production, though. That's what was most upsetting, because it's a brand new version of the car and they're launching right away. So there've been other big jumps like that for sure, but there were normally it comes with like changing some. There's a new feature coming out, or there's a new version of the car, refresh, whatever. So that like eased the pain a little bit, but the car didn't change at all with that $5,000 difference. So my point was, it's not the only example right now. I mean, you look at the pricing structure of the Model 3, the all-wheel drive powertrain changed price 5 times in like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, they need to solidify that a little bit. Like, think about it a little bit more, maybe, and kind of stick with what they're going to go with.
Yeah, and it went up and down, too. It's not like they're able to increase production and decrease the price. It went up, it went down, it went up, it went down, so come on.
Yeah, and then look at the price of, like, full autopilot.
Now, yeah, that's the other thing.
That changes, like, hourly. All right, I'm with Maxim in the comments. He's telling us to move on from the subject already.
We're like 12 minutes on it. I calculated even more time than that for it. But anyway, okay. Moving on. Oh, what happened here?
Mid-range Model 3 now. Buy it now so you get the full tax credit. And you can even drive to Fremont and get it in like, what,
less than 4 weeks? Less than 4 weeks, you say.
So, you know, December 2nd, buy yourself a Christmas gift and a plane ticket to Fremont, and you can have a Model 3 with a $7,500 tax credit.
Yeah, it's starting to become more clear now why they came up with the mid-range. It was to start to create a compromise for the people that were waiting for the base version, but now and they were waiting for it, but they were budgeting for the $7,500 credit, and now it becomes clear that Tesla is not going to be able to produce that battery pack in time. So now they're coming up with that compromise that's a little bit cheaper, a little bit more expensive than the base version, but cheaper than the current long range one, with less range than the current version, but more than you could get with the standard battery pack. And because a few weeks ago, if you remember, Tesla also sent out some emails to people saying that you need to order soon if you want to get the full credit for the current versions of the cars, Model 3, Model S, and X. So this new email is specifically for the mid-range version, which makes me think that Tesla is going to concentrate production, going to focus production on that car.
It sounds like it, yeah.
For the next few weeks to a month, really. Which... you mentioned the timeline if you go pick up the car for Fremont. But the West Coast, it's 4 weeks. Central U.S., it's 6 weeks. And it's 8 weeks for the East Coast. So you pretty much have to order it like right now if you're on the East Coast, if you want to have the change to get the full tax credit. And, of course, if not, if you get it after the December 31st, it goes down to $3,750, which is not the end of the world, but... can make a pretty big difference on a $45,000 car, $36,000 car.
Yeah, so imagine you're getting $4,000-ish off the price of the car. So you're getting a $46,000 car for $42,000, or would you rather have a $35,000 car for, what, 21, you know, assuming that they can get it together in the first half of 2019 and sell the $35,000 car?
Yeah.
Would you rather get that for $32,000? A lot of people may choose to go for the $46,000 one.
Yeah, that's one thing that we were looking at. Like when, back a few months, like Tesla had a bunch of like dumb and trigger that they could pull lever, they call it, like dumb and lever that they could trigger to boost them. And by the end of the year, it became clear that they didn't need some artificial one because they had this this one already, which is the end of the full tax credit. So I'm pretty sure that, like you said, I'm going to create a lot of demand for the mid-range version of the car, which leads us to the current production level for this week. As usual, every week we update you with the latest production at Tesla. Production went down a lot this week. We reported about 5,000 cars total, about 3,500 Model 3s. That's down from 6,500 last week, 4,400 Model 3s.
Why do you hate Tesla, Fred?
I don't know for sure, but I made some speculation. And, of course, it coincided with the start of mid-range production, the production of the mid-range vehicle. And maybe that's going to coincide with the production ramp up. So historically, Tesla, before a production ramp, had a few slow weeks, like 1 or 2 weeks that were quite slow, assuming that they were taking some days or shifts off to upgrade the lines. And that would make sense in this case here, because Tesla says that they are aiming to boost to 7,000 Model 3s a week. And they're aiming to do that without new production lines. They're aiming to do it with the current ones. And, I mean, I don't see how you can upgrade the production capacity on the current lines without affecting the production rate for at least a few days or even a few weeks.
Yeah, and I think Elon Musk said that on the conference call. He said that they would need to stop production to make the upgrades, so that they can go to higher levels.
Yeah, I don't remember that exactly, but that would make sense, certainly. And that might be what we're seeing right now.
I hope so.
Yeah, so with those new 3,500 Model 3s, it brings the total to about 20,000 Model 3, 20,100 for the quarter, which is we're a month in the quarter right now, and close to 30,000 vehicles total. So we're still close to 1,000 vehicles a week. A little bit below that right now for the moment, since we are November 2nd now. But it's still the best start to a quarter for Tesla ever. So, I mean, hard to complain, even though it's kind of weird to see Tesla go back to the 3,000 Model 3 range when they've been talking about 5,000 and 6,000 even back in August. Of course, that never happened, but
still a lot of cars.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're only selling cars in North America, so.
Oh yeah, I don't think that demand is an issue really. I think it's still all related to production. We also got some news about some upgrades this week, especially for the autopilot, and a bunch of talk about summon features. And it's a little bit complex because the way Elon was talking about it, I think he was talking about two different upgrades to the summon feature. So Tesla has been talking about a smart summon ever since they released the Autopilot 2.0 hardware suite back in 2016. Summon didn't really see any updates over the last 2 years. But now Elon is talking about, again, I think I'm understanding correctly, two different updates. There's going to be a next-gen one that's going to come out next year. And it's going to be able to navigate a whole parking lot by itself and even read the parking signs and know if it can park or not or for how long, and even move if it needs to. Because one of a Tesla owner, no, I don't have the video here.
Yeah, it's up a little bit.
Yeah, it's not showing up for some reason, though. But yeah, a Tesla owner ended up making a demonstration from his office, was able to use a summon to go to change a parking spot, but that was just back and forth from a spot that was a parallel parking, so just moving a few feet forward and a few feet backward.
Actually, like, you know, I don't know how this is in other cities, but if you live in Brooklyn or anywhere in New York, you have like one day a week where you can't park your car. So basically it keeps people moving their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And if it could figure that out, that would be a huge deal. Although, you know, it would probably, like, I've seen people drive around for 20-30 minutes looking for a new spot when their old spot gets taken up. But if Tesla could figure that out, that would really, you know, that would be like a easy sale for most New Yorkers.
Yeah, but you're talking about parking on the street, right?
Yeah, street parking versus parking structure.
Yeah. So my...
I would have to figure out where I could do that.
Yeah, I don't think Tesla... I think it's still going to be limited to private spaces, really.
I think so as well, but down the road.
Yeah, for sure, eventually. So yeah, so that's one of it, and we were skeptical. I was skeptical in my post about it because humans right now have a lot of difficulties reading parking signs and knowing if they can park or not. So I think an AI surpassed us already at that would be quite an achievement in my opinion. But like I said in the post, I think Elon knows more about that than I do. So, I click on the Tesla ticket avoidance mode, which you can watch the video on Electrek, but if you haven't figured it out yet, it's an April Fool's joke. It's not.
It is, but like I said, with the future, it may not be.
Yeah, it's clear. Well, I mean, running away from the cops, that's another thing, though. I get running away from moving around to avoid tickets, sure, but when the cops is actually here, that's another thing. All right, so... So that was one of the sermon that Elon. So, and the most complex thing about that was, I think, reading the parking signs. But then he started talking about another sermon update coming within 6 weeks, and it sounds like it's a completely different update. But it also includes some very advanced features. He talked about.
Are you talking about the RC cars?
Yeah, you'd be able to remotely control your car if you are within sight. You can see the car. You can use your phone and control it as an RC car, which I assume...
It seems crazy.
Yeah.
Like, because then you could have like RC races with your friends.
Yeah.
You know, like, around parking lots and stuff. I hope that's not the case. I hope it's something, you know, like...
It has to be speed limited for sure. So it's not like it's going to be a race, I think. But
within 6 weeks, though, we'll find out. That's not too like I'm going to remember that one.
Yeah, but you know, 6 weeks. That's Elon time.
Elon time, right?
But yeah, there was another thing though. It wasn't just that. I can drive. Follow you as a pet. He said also. So that's something he's been talking about for a while. It's pretty close. Like because you right now with someone, it's basically move forward and backward, and the car can move laterally a little bit to try to avoid some obstacles. But it's just, I think, what was it, 25 feet, I think, the limit right now on someone?
Right, and you can switch it in the app, like how far you can go.
Yeah, but now it sounds like they're going to increase that limit, and it will not only try to move forward and backward, it will follow you, so you can click on your phone, and it will follow you the car around. Not sure how useful that will be yet. I'm trying to think of some application. I don't know if I'm just not, my imagination is not, on par with Tesla's here, but I don't see that many application for that.
Yeah. It's a head scratcher. You know, like if you're looking for a spot, I guess, in the parking lot, I don't know.
Well, the only thing that I can see is it's sort of just a little step to create sort of the framework for another features like the one he was talking about where you can just move around the parking lot and find its own parking spot. Like it would be similar to if you get out of a lot where you park your car, whatever, then you go back to the parking lot and then you could just click on your phone and the car will come out and meet you whatever you are in the parking lot. So go to your phone, follow you. That could be like a first step toward that, creating just the basis for that. A lot like Tesla is doing right now with Navigate on Autopilot, I think, which we don't see as a very useful feature right now, but it does create the framework by integrating the navigation system into Autopilot. You're creating the framework for self-driving car because eventually the goal of self-driving car is you get into your car, enter the destination in the navigation system, and the car is going to drive you there. So it's not that at all right now, but you need at some point to integrate navigation into Autopilot, and that's what it is. So I think it's a comparable thing. I think we're trying to see Tesla laying the framework for that. They're working on it, and at the same time, they're trying to release some features with what they have right now to sort of let the owners know, hey, we're still working on that stuff. Because as you know, if you bought an Autopilot 2.0 car 2 years ago, I mean, you should. It's okay to be angry about not having the features at this point because you're 2 years of being paid for the features that you don't have. It's not ideal. The price of Autopilot, we just talked about, we briefly touched that earlier in the podcast, but yeah, they increased the price from the price after delivery. So it's still $5,000 if you order a new car right now, but if you order the car without it and you're planning on buying it after delivery, instead of $6,000, now it's $7,000. So it's a $2,000 premium if you don't order it at the beginning.
And, but it's also grandfathered if you purchase the car knowing that it would be a $1,000 premium. They're letting people, right? Isn't that?
Well, they didn't say that for this one, but they said it for the full self-driving one. And I think it would make sense to do the same thing for people because
right.
you made the decision.
I'm sure you can talk them down to it.
Yeah, you made the decision when buying the car. Thinking, I don't feel like it's worth it to buy it now, but that's thinking that I'm going to have to pay $1,000 more whenever I want it. If it's now $2,000, maybe you wouldn't have taken the same decision at first. So it's all about being open about what is going to be the pricing, which goes back to our other problem with Tesla's pricing, of course. This time, it looks like they're taking steps to be more open about it because they're also including the fact that after delivery prices are subject to change. So even if it's $10,000 now, if they change it again later on, it looks like Tesla will not honor the $7,000 price. So this time, like, it wouldn't be grandfathered in the next time they change the pricing. What I don't think is I don't think that's great because people are making a decision when they buy it, and this decision is based on how much going to be the premium right now. And it's understandable that someone wouldn't want to buy it because Tesla hasn't delivered on the features that they're promising for that package, so it makes sense that you wouldn't want you didn't buy it for your Model 3, right?
No, but I mean, I have a Model X that we use it on,
yeah,
and we use for trips. So it's actually coming up. We're going to Ohio next weekend after the podcast,
mm-hmm.
and we're trying to figure out to take if we should take the Model X or the Model 3. Model 3 has 310 miles of range, but no autopilot. Model X has autopilot, and I think we're going to take the Model X, so that means we're probably going to have to stop one extra time because it doesn't have the range.
Mm-hmm.
But that autopilot is...
It's worth it, right?
It's so worth it, yeah.
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 Yeah, it makes a big difference, and it improved a lot. So did you get the 2018.42?
Yep.
Yeah, all right, so you're going to be able to try out the navigate on the...
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And I mean, it's really not that. So to get from New York to Ohio, you take this freeway called the 80, and it's just
so it's straight line.
Yeah, so it's not really. I don't know. Maybe there'll be something to try it out on. But
well, it's gonna based on your speed. It also suggests to you that
right. It'll pass people going too slow, and
well, it will pass. You still need to initiate the lane change, but
right.
It'd be a good reference to know, like, okay, right now I would start the pass right now, or so do you initiate the pass before the system suggested to you, or vice versa? That's a good right. thing to know. I think that that's a good indicator whether the system is getting at the human level, really.
Mm-hmm.
Tesla pickup truck. So we've been reporting for a few months now about how Elon always says, well, always, I think he said it two times, but it's still noteworthy, I think, that Elon is talking about the pickup truck being his favorite products of Tesla coming up. And
yeah, he's strangely excited about
it. It's strange, right? Because, I mean, you have the Roadster coming up, you have the Tesla Semi coming up, you have the Model Y coming up. I mean, there's so much stuff from Tesla coming up, and it's a pickup truck that he's most excited about. I mean, that's something to say. And we didn't know for sure what that was about. I mean, we reported a few months back when he asked suggestions and he revealed a few specs, or at least specs that Tesla targets. But now, on this morning on the podcast, the Recode podcast, he shared a little bit more why he's excited about it, and he's excited about the design of it. He said that it's going to be a really futuristic-like cyberpunk design, much like Blade Runner. And he's aware that not everyone would like that, though he's hopeful that people will actually like it, because he says that it stopped my heart. That's what he said. It's heart-stopping.
I wonder if he's talking about Blade Runner 1982 or the new Blade Runner.
Yeah, I went back because I saw both films, and I mean, when you talk about vehicles in Blade Runner, the only thing that comes to mind, like, it's flying cars. Blade Runner, that's what the vehicles are about, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I put a picture up there of the most recent one with, what's his face, Ryan Gosling. And the car he's driving is, you could say cyberpunk, I think. You know, I'm not an expert in cyberpunk culture, cyberpunk design, but it has a feel to it. But it's very much a car, and then I don't see like a truck. But I also saw a few design, like other trucks on that was in the most recent one that was really like background stuff, so you couldn't see it right. And they did look a little bit like the actual concept that they released of the pickup truck, or the Tesla pickup truck that looked like the Tesla Semi. Not exactly, but I don't see what's cyberpunk about that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks very much...
I'm just looking at a Google image search. The one that's on the Blade Runner 2041, that's got like a motorcycle in the back. It actually kind of looks like a Saunders three-wheeled car. But yeah, the you know the hatch opening, it's a little bit...
Do you have... can you share the screen?
Yeah, it kind of looks like a DeLorean a little bit.
Yeah, the DeLorean, I saw a bunch of things that came out when I searched it that looks very similar to the DeLorean.
You see that?
Which one?
The one right in the middle.
Can you make it bigger? Or?
No, I'm clicking on...
That's a poster on Amazon.
Yeah, so, I know.
It looks a lot like that's the car that the main character is driving, right? Well, or flying, I should say, maybe.
No, it's got wheels.
I think it has wheels too. Like it flies and it drives, if I remember correctly.
Right.
Anyway, what you're saying, they're all cars. They're not that many trucks, really. There's a few trucks, but. I don't know. Well, when he says, like, I don't know how futuristic and cyberpunk work together, though, because cyberpunk also, like, feels retro to me. Like, it's a sort of combining the future and the retro look. So, I don't know. When I try to imagine it, I'm having some difficulties.
Yeah, it's not a good clue.
It's not a good clue, but it's fun that he's excited about it, though. Because, and I mean, if you look at all Tesla's designs over the years, they haven't got a lot wrong, really. Some people didn't like the Model X. Personally, I'm okay with it, and I don't think it's the best design of Tesla. I think the Model S looks better, but I love the Model 3. Crazy love the new Roadster. So Friends Van Halsen, he knows his stuff, and the team, he has a good team behind him, I think. So pretty excited about that, and he seems to be open about the fact that if it flops, if it's not something that has a wide appeal enough, they're gonna make a more conventional looking one, and I think that shouldn't be a big issue because they still have all the development for the chassis and the powertrain and everything, so they can leverage all that into a more conventional looking truck, I think. But if you don't remember, he did release a few specs about the truck. He did say that it's going to be a big one, too. It's going to be a huge truck. It's going to be a six-seater. It's going to be able to fit Andre the Giant. Rest in peace. And it's going to have a range for 400 to 500 miles, maybe options with more range. So, pretty excited about that truck. And I've been saying for a while, what Tesla needs to do, even if it's like, I don't see it coming before 2021, 2022 or something like that, but
they need to announce it.
Come again?
They need to announce it.
They need to reveal it and take reservation right away. I think it needs to be like at the same time as the Model Y next year. Unveil it, take reservation, build a huge demand for it, and force the hand of the automakers that are all in pickup trucks right now, like GM, like Ford, and show them that there's a huge demand for electric pickup truck, and then they'll pour billions into them because they know that's their big profit center. Don't want to let it go.
I'm calling it now. I think March 15th or whatever, whenever the Model Y is announced, I think they're going to announce the pickup truck as well.
Yeah.
That's just my feeling.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm as confident as you, but I wish it will be for sure. That would be awesome. Because the timing of the release of the actual, the start of production is completely unclear right now. We know Model Y is planned for like late 2020, but never said any confirmed date on the pickup. It would have to be later, I think. But it could be not that far behind. So yeah, that'd be very cool.
So check this out. I found this website, Geeks Times Girls or whatever. And they have some real-life versions of Blade Runner cars. So this may be helpful. So they even have a Tesla, which kind of looks like
garbage. They take existing cars and they Blade Runner them.
Yeah, I guess. So.
Oh, yeah, this one. This one, the truck here.
So the bottom one, yeah, that's the one. I mean, that kind of looks like the semi, right?
Exactly. I think that's the one I saw earlier when I was researching it, but I only saw it there, so it looks like they're taking the Tesla semi and making it look like Blade Runner more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, still exciting stuff for the pickup truck. Some other exciting stuff that came out this week with Tesla is the Megapack. And I think Musk mentioned it during the podcast too this morning.
Yes, he said, but he didn't mention it by name, but he mentioned pretty much what we had expected.
What we speculated based on what we reported earlier this week. What we reported on Electriseek is that an employee on Reddit, not an employee, someone that's in the hiring process for an intern position at Tesla mentioned...
No longer an employee.
Well, he never was. He's trying to be an employee at Tesla or an intern. And he mentioned in a post on Reddit where he was... asking for some advice. He mentioned that the intern role was in the production of the Mega Pack. So we saw that. The intern quickly deleted the post after that because, of course, people pointed out to him that it's not a good idea to reveal information ahead of having the position, or even if you have the position. Like you said, you could be fired for that. But we did some digging after that, and we found other people, other Tesla employees that did mention in the their LinkedIn profile, something called the Mega Pack at Tesla. And Jeff Johnson, who's a former senior technical program manager at Tesla, mentioned the Mega Pack as an energy module. The guy worked on other modules at Tesla for the Model 3s and for Tesla Energy products with the 2170 cells. And now he says that something is coming called the Mega Pack. So what we speculated is... So you have the power pack. Mega pack sounds very similar, with mega probably being a reference to megawatt hour, so an energy capacity of 1,000 kilowatt hour, instead of the power pack being, I think it's 210 now, the second generation, generation power pack. So it would be a bigger version of the power pack with more energy capacity in it. We also said that it could have something to do with the mega charger, which is the supercharger version for the Tesla Semi. And our speculation on that back when the Tesla Semi was in the deal is that that would have a charge weight of around a megawatt too. So having to do with that, maybe... and we expect Tesla to need some energy storage capacity at mega charger. So you could have to deploy a mega pack. So it's the same thing. It will be the same thing, like you said, as it will be an energy capacity system, but can be deployed at the mega charger. So that could be where the name's also coming from. I don't know. Like that's still speculation. But what Elon said this morning in the podcast was that they are working on a bigger energy storage system. So like it has to be.
No, it was something like more specifically. He said we're working on something that'll make the electric companies really happy, or something like that.
I think,
maybe said that separately or something.
He did say that for sure, but I think he also mentioned that it's going to be a bigger energy storage system.
Mm-hmm. So that fits really. That aligns really well with the Megapack name, I think.
Yeah. So look out for a new product from Tesla Energy called Megapack. Yeah, the Chevy. So I'm going to let you talk about this one because you wrote the post about it. the Shiri Kamaru, what do you call it? Hikopo or Isopio, whatever?
Hikopo, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a super muscle car guy, but Chevy came to us and said, hey, we have an embargo. Do you want to, hold this for a while? And I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is BS. Like, they basically outsourced, they basically had some other company build an electric version of their, what's called the Copo Camaro, or it's called the Copo Camaro. And it's kind of an interesting story. This one former race driver who turned into a Chevrolet dealer about 50 years ago ordered, like basically special ordered 50 crazy horsepower, not street legal cars and sold them all over the country. And they're basically Camaros with the most powerful Corvette engines, and they're all supercharged and the wheels are super fat in the back and, basically everything you can put in, and they get hundreds of thousands of dollars for these things, and they only make 50 a year. So it's kind of like their thing.
You're referring to? Is that him?
I can't remember the guy's name. But this was a while ago. So this is kind of like, this is all just research for me.
Mm-hmm.
I had never heard of this stuff before, but so they have this like Copo program, and it's their and Dodge has a program as well, and I think they use the Viper for that, or no, the Hellcat or something. Anyway, basically, if you want to buy a drag car, if you want to just go to drag races and basically drive this car around on a flatbed or trailer or something, this is basically what you buy. And then once you get the car, then you start doing fine tuning on it yourself to try to get a few more horsepower out of it or lighten it up a little bit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But these are basically like what people race, like the typical race. If you've got a couple hundred thousand dollars laying around and you want to race cars, this is like something people buy. And there's only 50 of these made a year. They're super powerful. You can see from the YouTube on the bottom, like the guy's doing wheelies in a Camaro,
mm-hmm.
which is like kind of silly. Anyway, so it's a thing. Like it's the muscle car head folks at Chevy are really into this Copo program. It's very like significant and serious. So why it means anything, like sure. Chevrolet is not building this. They basically outsourced it to this company that does electrification of cars, which I thought was a little bit interesting. It's called Hancock and Lane Racing. And, they do NHRA stuff. Patrick McHugh, who you mentioned before, is, the guy, I guess, or one of the guys who do... the shock and awe electric drag racing car.
Okay.
So, what they did is they went to him and they said, "Hey, here's a Ecopo, turn it into an electric dragster." So they got 700 horsepower, 600 pounds of torque, which isn't that's not crazy. Like that's kind of close to what a Model S does, I think. A P100D.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're changing the world with this conversion, but it is kind of interesting because they're putting their Copo brand on it, which is like their hardcore racing brand. And they did mention in the press release that, or actually maybe in the conversation about it, that they are looking at some of this technology and looking at bringing it to their consumer cars. And we've heard about an electric Corvette for quite some time. I imagine Chevrolet doesn't want to be passed up in this whole electric revolution, so I'm sure they're working on some stuff there. It's just for people like me, when I hear that you build a one-off prototype car that you have no plans to replicate, and you built. And you didn't even do it yourself. You outsourced. It's like, that's kind of a letdown. But the fact that they're putting the Copo brand on it and they're you know getting the word out, that does say something to this. And also, what's another interesting thing about it is they're on 800 volts, which is double the typical 400 volts that like the Bolt and the Volt and actually most Teslas use. And if you go up to 800 volts, that means not only can you discharge faster, giving the thing more power, and I think it goes 9 second-ish, quarter mile. It also allows you to charge it quicker, which is important on drag surface. You know, you want to be fully charged on a drag strip. So this allows you to charge in just a few minutes. I don't know. It's like, it's not the biggest news in the world, but it is kind of cool. And it would, you know, theoretically, if GM wanted to go down this path and actually build an electric sports car, it would be, I think, well received.
Yeah, I think the Camaro should go electric. I think the Mustang should go electric. I mean, if they haven't started a program yet, because, I mean, the way you're describing it, it's not like there's an electric Camaro program right now. Like you said, they shipped a car to another company. They did it, and for some reason, GM is pushing the PR on it. Like, so I don't know about that. Maybe they're like testing the water, saying are people would be okay with an electric Camaro program. I mean, for sure, they'd be okay. If you want to continue making the regular gas-powered Camaro and see how much you sell compared to the electric one. As long as you make the electric one all right too. If you know, sometimes I have a weird suspicion that they don't make the electric car as great when they have a program where they have both the electric and the gas-powered one, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, what if you just put two... I mean, already right now, the people who build those Tesla, you know, like the Tesla Honda, they already use the Volt engine. They're sorry, the Volt batteries. Mm-hmm. They could put two Volt batteries, which would, you know, it wouldn't be terribly expensive, and have an all-wheel drive crazy car. Like, I don't, like, to me, it doesn't even seem like that harder project to build. And you wouldn't even have to build a new frame. You could just build it around a Camaro. Like, there's room for the amount of batteries inside, especially one of these like race cars. Camaros have four seats, so there's plenty of room. I just don't think there's the political will to do something like that.
Yeah, yet. That's a bummer. And we've been talking about too the fact that there's some, because I don't want to call the project greenwashing, because I mean, I'm sure that the guys that are doing the project are doing because they are excited about the fact that making an electric Camaro and everything. But maybe the fact that GM is using it as PR, because we were talking just... did we talk about last week? Well, no, that was earlier this week that was announced. GM...
Yeah, so we should talk about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
GM's plan to... it's the plan to slow down the electrification of vehicles.
Yeah, officially, let's give GM his point of view first. Well, it's the point of view that they're putting out there. I don't think that's what they want to do behind closed doors. But they're saying that they're pushing for the fuel standard that they lobbied against, the stricter fuel standard they're lobbying against. Now it's being reviewed and they want to replace it with something else. Some automakers are just calling to freeze it. GM raised their hand saying, we lobbied against the stricter rules, but we don't want to freeze it. Instead, we want to replace it with a national zero emission mandate. They want something similar that there is in California right now and the other CARB state that adopted the CARB ZEV mandate, and they want to apply it nationally. That sounds great, but when you actually look at it, it's very weak. I mean, I think you called it garbage, the garbage national standard.
It just slows everything down. I mean, the numbers they put out, right? They want to have 7 million EVs on the road by 2030.
7 million? That's a big number, Seth. You're not impressed by that? What are you talking about?
That's 12 years from now. That's if Tesla alone is going to make 7 million likely. I don't see how that's like a high target.
Yeah. I mean, and it'll work for them, for GM's PR, because of course all the headlines were GM aims for 7 million cars and 7 million electric cars. And if you don't know any better, that sounds a lot. But if you look at the actual target, year after year. It's like 4 years behind China. So if we implement that as a goal, not even like we're pushing, it's just a goal, and that doesn't mean we're going to hit it. Our goal is to be behind China. I mean, even your goal should always be higher, like you aim for better and more. And then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I mean, now the U.S. would, if they implement GM's plan, they would be aiming to be behind China, which was completely against the goal. Like for years, the U.S. was using the argument that we shouldn't invest in green energy because China is not investing in green energy, and that's why they are better than us right now in terms of regulations and the business going to China. I mean, it's proving to be the completely contrary in the past few years, where China has extremely accelerated their investment in electric vehicles and green energy, and the rest of the world is just falling behind. Well, not all the rest of the world. We know a bunch of markets that have been doing very well.
Norway
is the best example. But the U.S. is the other huge car market, like a single car market concentrated. And I mean, it's nothing compared to what China is doing right now. And GM is saying, let's aim below them, see where that takes us. I mean, that makes no sense. And it's also, I would argue, it's worse than the stricter fuel consumption standard that this thing is looking to replace. So they are presenting it as a green initiative, but it's everything but that, if you ask me. Lastly, let's talk a little bit about Faraday Future. Two bummers in a row. We bummed you out with GM, and now we're gonna bum you out with Faraday Future, because I mean, it looked like they were getting out of the woods last month or last 2 months or so. Earlier this year, when they got, they didn't get $2 billion from Evergrande, a Chinese holding firm. They got a deal for 45% of the company for a $2 billion investment plan, starting with $800 million, which is a lot of money, start with $800 million. So we thought that things were looking up for Faraday Future. They might be able to finally get that FF91 in production at the little factory that they have in California. But what happened last week is they announced that for the last month or so, there were rumors that there was a falling out between them and Evergrande. Something about after the $800 million, Evergrande said that Jiayu Ting, which is the CEO, of course, the brash CEO of FF, he said that he was trying to push Evergrande out, even though they were still like $1.2 billion on the line. They were trying to push him out because he thought that he could get the FF91 into production without the rest of the money, so he could retain a higher percentage of a higher stake in the company. But then in response, Faraday said that no, it's Evergrande that tried to release the other $1.2 billion in order to put the company in jeopardy. And with that, they'll be able to take over the whole company because they'd be stuck without money. So when that happened, and apparently, so they got that $800 million like just months back, and apparently they already went through all of that. So now they didn't need money, and not only Evergrande wasn't releasing any, they couldn't raise more money from other investors because of their contract with Evergrande. So apparently Faraday Future sued Evergrande, and they won in court last week. They won the right to seek other investor, apparently. I think that's what they were saying. But what they said at the same time is that because they were running out of money while they were suing Evergrande, they had to lay off a bunch of staff, and they have to cut salaries by 20%, which doesn't look good. And then what happened too is that a bunch of other executives left, including some very important executive. We reported on Peter Savagian. How do you pronounce his name again?
I'm not sure, but he was the lead of the GM EV1 program, which is obviously a big pioneering project.
Yeah, yeah, he was a legend in the early AV AV world, and he was one of the guy was one of the very early hire by Faraday Future, and it gave a lot of credibility to the company that was able to go get that level of talent. And Savagin also built a whole team around him for the powertrain, because he was in charge, I think, of the powertrain of the car, and developed a brand new inverter that was very powerful and lightweight and everything. It was a lot of they did develop some cool technology there, but now he left last week, and now we learned later in the week Nick Sampson also left, and Nick Sampson was also one of the earliest hour. Actually, he was considered, I think, a founding partner in the company. So Jia Yuting, CEO from China, was the only founder and CEO, was the guy that started everything. But to get things started, he needed some people that actually know what they were doing in terms of building an electric car. And he hired Nick Sampson, who was a VP at Tesla.
Yeah, and Nick Sampson's been kind of the face, you know,
exactly. Like
at all the events and the announcements. He's kind of like the lead presenter. So
yeah, he was thought to be the CEO for the longest time, really.
Right. So this is pretty much, like, I hate to say it, but I think it's probably the death. And you know, to your point earlier, like, how did they go through $800 million?
So fast.
I think it's because they had racked up so much
debt yeah.
until that point that they probably, like, all that, most of that $800 million was already earmarked for paying off, you know,
suppliers. They were being sued by suppliers a lot. So yeah, that's, you're probably right. They had to, a lot of that probably went within the first few months, just paying those off. But yeah, to your point, Nick Sampson leaving is really the most worrying thing, because he was the biggest cheerleader for the company for the longest time. Like, while a bunch of other like top executives were leaving, they were able like to prop up Sampson and say, hey, Sampson is still here. He's our main guy. He's been our main guy for 3 years now. And now he leaves. And I mean,
I think Faraday will probably get sold for pennies on the dollar to either one of the other EV companies, or, you know, like an Apple or Google or something.
Yeah, an Apple or Google would make sense, I think, because depending on the debt, we don't know how much debt they still owe this one. If it's they still have like half a billion in debt, and I think I don't know who wants to pay that off.
Well, it'll go through bankruptcy court, and you know, it'll be sold off in pieces, and you know, they'll get whatever they can get for it. So maybe they'll get a good price. And as far as you know, the people leaving, I think they'll probably all find jobs, because the EV market space is so hot right now.
Oh yeah, I don't think that's going to be an issue really.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I do see them being bought by someone maybe. I think there's some good technology in there. I don't think anyone wants to just pick up the program, though.
No.
Like, we've been talking, when Lucid Motors was had issues, I made the argument that an automaker could just buy the company and keep the whole Lucid Air program going, rebrand it, whatever, or even keep the brand and make it an EV sub-brand, which I think is a good idea when you are in a where you're a gas powered car maker. But
yeah, GM should have done that.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was worth it. They had some good technology. Well, they still have, they're still in business and everything. They got their $1 billion from the Saudis. which is controversial at this point nowadays, understandably. But I mean, I thought it was worth it to just keep the whole program and have it going right that. For Faraday, I think what we hear about the cost of the actual FF91, I mean, people are talking about $200,000 and $300,000 for that car, and talking about like a Bentley competitor or a Rolls Royce competitor. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a space for that at some point in the EV, but I mean, Rolls Royce, you're paying for the name. the cars are great. I mean, there's some value, but a lot of it is paying for the name, and Faraday doesn't have that, so they just have that ultra luxury electric car, which I don't know. But
so on that note, we end the podcast this week.
Yeah, that's about it, right? We did go through all the news, so thanks a lot everyone for listening. And next week we're gonna be I'm gonna be with Micah. We're gonna go to Milan for the big motorcycle show. So I'm going to be outside of the country all week, and we're going to be reporting live a bunch of new electric motorcycles, electric scooter, electric bikes from there. That's going to be awesome. But the posting schedule on electric is going to be affected, of course, because we're going to be on a European time all week. But I'm going to be back for the podcast same time with Seth. So see you next time. Bye-bye.